Good afternoon all. On the ApacheCon day, I would like to introduce Victoria from Tech Society, who is going to speak about exploring and integrating UX in open source software development. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, hello everyone. Thank you for coming. It's almost the end of the conference. You probably learn a lot. Now I suggest you a light topic about usability, not so technical. So what I want to talk about today is about non-technical contribution and, to be concrete, usability contribution to open source and how a project can apply usability principles, UX principles. Before we get into details, let me introduce myself. My name is Victoria. I came from Seoul, South Korea. I'm an engineer. I studied image processing, but then I got into UX research and worked mostly for Android interfaces and integrating UX practices in software development. I'm part of open source design community. I will talk more about this community, and also I'm happy to contribute to Valentina project. Have you ever heard about Valentina? It's not Apache. It's an open source pattern drafting software. So if you want to make your own clothes, this is a software, very nice software. And the reason why I'm here, because I'm very interested how make it work, and my story started a few years ago, and this is a very dear screenshot to me. This is my first contribution to open source, which failed completely. I just knew nothing about open source. I knew open source is a nice community. So I just found the project, submitted a few wireframes because I thought it would be a nice improvement to that project. However, after 2 years, issue is still in review, no feedback, nothing. People are not very excited. But I could learn a lesson that usually people don't like outsiders tell them what to do. And it made me thinking how to be part of this community. So that's what I'm going to talk today about. And before we go into that, I want to establish a little bit of understanding what usability and UX is. UX is a little bit confusing term. It's changing, and everyone is confused with this terminology, not only engineers, designers as well. UX stands for design interactive system, so that it bring a positive experience to users, which is very difficult to measure. That's why I think it's a very confusing topic. But what's easy to measure is usability, and I'm sure all of you heard this term before. So usability is a quality attribute that assesses how easy user interface are to use. And this is something you can measure. I will explain later. So usability, it's an old term, and I like to believe that it was, when it was applied to software as early as 1963. You probably, all of you know this famous work by Ivan Sutherland, Sketchpad. This is a Turing Award-winning work, and many UX designers believe it actually was the beginning of so-called human-computer interaction field. So his work is actually very great if you're into design and interface design. Although usability is not only about interfaces, and it's a very old term, it still brings confusion and with all sorts of things. And what's important to understand, usability is not UX design. And as we established at our bar court a few days ago, that there is a fundamental difference. Usability experience design is when you create product that users want to use, and usability is when you create product that users just can easily use. They don't need to like it. They just can solve the issue. Everyone can hear me? Okay, good. So it's also not minimalism or simplicity, and it has nothing to do with customer opinion, because what customers say and what customers or users do, it's a completely different thing. And it's, of course, not a common sense, but sometimes it is. And it's not only good design, because you can design a very nice application, but then no one will ever use it because it doesn't solve a concrete issue. So, but what usability is about is something, is a few qualities that you can measure, and it's always defined by Jacob Nielsen and Norman and Nielsen group, inventors of usability in software. So learnability is something that you can measure, and it's how easy users can accomplish basic tasks. There's also a quality of efficiency. It's when you learn design, how quickly you can perform every task at that software. If you stop using this software, how easy it is to reestablish your proficiency. And if you do errors, how many of them, how easy it is to recover from errors, and how severe they are. And least important, satisfaction factor, how pleasant it is to use software. Bad usability makes users feel dumb and hate creators of software, so it damages reputation, not only open source, but proprietary software as well, so we better avoid it. And good usability makes software and system usable by ordinary people, consistent and accessible, which is very important. So this is the only one equation you should think about when you create a software product. And what is great about open source, it already has all the value. People appreciate it and want to use it, but sometimes you need some skills to use it. And it's fine. Traditionally, open software was created by engineers, as it often said, to scratch their own itch, and it's okay. Nothing wrong with that, but there are more and more users, the more and more platform for non-technical users as well. And the more satisfied those users are with the software, the more accessibility the software can get. Do you have any questions about usability, or we can move on? Okay, very, very clear. So, but how can we apply it to software development? Is it easy to do, or what are the issues? To discover that, I started with some literature review, and a friend of mine from one Apache project recommended me the Bible, maybe, of all the books exist on open source, The Cathedral and the Bazaar. I'm sure many of you read this book. It's not about usability, but it's a great overview of how traditional software development differs from open source. And it's great to understand when you want to be part of it. And surprisingly, from about the same time, from early 2000, there were more and more open source and usability-related papers in academia. So I have a few of them here. All great papers, interesting to read, and they still continue to appear even more these days. And if you're interested in papers and love to read them, please check this GitHub repository I try to maintain. I have already more than 40 papers on this topic. If you have something to contribute, also welcome. So what I learned from these papers, there was one of research that asked huge number of contributors to open source what they think about usability, and it appears that 81% of open source contributors consider the importance of usability is high or extremely high, which is good. It's not only users, but contributors as well. But however, most of the research finds that open source usability is overlooked, rarely applied, and even suggested usability methods would not work in open source. Is it true or not? Let's find out. So there are a few reasons that research emphasizes. So I will talk about three of them: culture of usability work and open source, the idea of users, and approach to development process. So open source culture is known to be meritocratic, where participants gain merit through contributing. And usually, it's supposed to be very hard problems, code-related problems, and they have a greater reputation incentive. And it seems possibly one of the reasons why designers cannot be involved, because it's very difficult for usability experts to gain merit, because most of usability issues considered to be boring issues, like fixing a pop-up for a grandmother or something. So they don't have the same merit. And if you probably could see, this is a structure, onion structure that usually used to describe open source culture. And in this structure, rings represent decision-making power within the community, and all the power is inside the first core ring where core team is, and there's no ring for designers. So, but I hope there will be soon. What is also important that how people with the usability background see their users and how contributors and engineers to open source imagine their users. And it appeared that in a community where technical skills appear to be the most respected, usability problems are just less challenging and users, engineers and developers cannot empathize with the users because they don't have the similar level of technical skills. And which is actually true. By definition, users are supposed to use the system without technical expertise required to fully understand it. But then again, like, who of us can understand all of it, right? We use software open source and we don't know how it works. So as much as we want to imagine our users like this, smart engineers, most of the time they look like this and have no idea how to solve their issues. And another, maybe one of the main reason why usability methods not always work in open source is the approach to development. Open source is usually known to take bottom-up approach where it can be born from little feature, grow with the more features, and then bypass any usability concerns to a product. But for product to be design-oriented, it has to take top-down approach, where designers from the beginning are given power to make decisions and can speak for the users. That's how it works in enterprise, and that's how it has been proven to work in different huge and big open source projects where these projects have a foundation that can support UX people or UX team and can support their decision in design. So there were a few examples, and those are great open source projects with great usability. Also, a top-down approach is easy to support if you work in a small company, just a few people contribute to a project. This is a project called Taiga. I'm not sure if you heard about it. It's a project management tool made in Spain by just a few people born from a small company, and from the beginning they had a usability expert involved, and it's a very nice software. And also the same people are now trying to make UX tool actually for design, open source UX tool. I'm really looking forward to see that one, because now on the market there's only proprietary software for designers. There's some open source, but again, sometimes difficult to use. So the question now is, how about all other projects? How about projects that doesn't have any designers involved? How an independent designer like me can contribute? Is it only just frustration and not understanding each other, or we can do something about it? And what I believe in that two parties should move towards each other and try to understand how it works and build a common ground where we share the same vision and understanding. So that could help the community to develop and grow. And that's how we get to the third part of my talk, where I want to share with you a few ideas. What can you do for your project if you don't have a background, research or design background? First, it's not related, but I want to share a little bit what I learned myself and what I talk to designers about when I explain them how to participate in open source. And I think for a designer, it's the matter of understanding culture and building trust and social merit with the community. So if you want to make some design for any open source project, I think it's better, you better start from being a user and being part of community and earning merit through recognizable contributions like documentation or reporting bugs or helping other users. And only after that you can start designing. And I think it will, you will avoid failing like me when you can establish some relationship with the community. But what engineers can do, there are a few UX research methods that I want to talk to today about. They're very, very foundation of UX research and very easy to do even if you don't have any specific knowledge. So one of the first methods I want to start with is user interview. It basically looks like this. You have to find your user, sit next to that person, and ask all the questions. And you don't have even meet your user. Sometimes it's easy to do through online surveys. For example, Jupyter is a good example. You can see their questions and answers and learn from that. I don't know many Apache projects, but I could find that did that, but I could find a few examples. Apache Spark Survey every year, it's a great example how you can learn about where project is going and what users are expecting from the project. So when you prepare for interview, it's very important to decide a few things in advance. First of all, what exactly you're going to explore. It could be just an easy explorative research who your user is. And I guarantee you will get lots of surprises because all unexpected people will use your software and it's great to learn their needs as well. But it also could be a narrow research about a particular feature you want to implement or you have or people request, but you're just not sure it's something right for your project. Then you have to find the right user if you go for a kind of like narrow survey. So you need to find those who actually will use that and maybe prepare detailed scenarios. For example, I really like this survey which recently came out by Apache Medley project. You also can use it as an example. It was a more like about wide range of topics and explorational research about their users. And once you get to the interview, it's also very important to explain why you what you're trying to achieve. Because sometimes users, I feel they feel tested. They're like they're being tested, or it's kind of exam. So to lose that feeling, it's very important to make a really relaxed atmosphere and explain that whatever they do is right. And next, to avoid any pre-decision or any opinion you have, it's good to reduce leading questions and not to ask direct or yes or no questions. That's what I learned from doing a survey for Valentina project. We decided to make an application which we didn't know even has a need for the community. The application was for the tailors to measure to body measurements. So the client comes in, they write down measurements, and then put it to Valentina and can make all the kind of patterns. And when we started to make a list of questions, there were questions like, do you need an application? And, you know, most of the people say, oh, yeah, why not? But we don't want that. So it's very important to discover how they deal with this issue right now. So instead, we ask applications like, where do you measure your clients? What if you have remote clients? How do you deal with that? Where do you save your results? How often and how many measurements you do? We learn a lot, and it changed our perspective completely from the first draft of wireframes. After this survey, we had to change it a lot. And maybe the most challenging part of interviewing users is actually showing the result to the community, because you learn something, and sometimes it's probably not very quantitative data. It's qualitative data that you have to represent for the community, and it's a very great source for decision making later. So it's not easy, but what I can recommend you it's better try to contain the result and just show key data and leave all the minor stuff because no one is interested. And this is again a Medlib example where they use word clouds to show the most popular user cases and requested features. I think just one glance and you can understand what users expect to have in this product. So that was about users interview. And I want to move on to usability testing, the most fun UX methods in history, I believe. Any of you tried usability testing? Oh, okay. Was it painful, fun?
The first time was very painful.
Yes, yes. But that's fun
the
of it.
The second time was great because we were taking learnings and bringing them back.
Yes, yes, okay. And did it help? I assume it helped you to build a better product. Yeah, usability testing can be very expensive. This is usually how it looked like in IBM 50 years ago, maybe 40. Still looks like that in big companies. They videotape people performing some task, which is expensive, time-consuming. You have to spend money to invite those users. Maybe you don't need to do that because, you know, too expensive and time-consuming. There's also another method that can work for you called hallway testing. That's you just go out and ask anyone outside to test your product, and I guarantee even small feedback will already help you to understand how to make it better. There's also a nice method called drunk user testing. I think it's one. It was created. Do you like to practice this usability? Yeah, I think it's nice for users because sometimes it could be very, very painful, and as well as for creators because, you can get stressed. It was invented by one person who reached out to the community and said, I will test your product, give me, like, buy me a beer, and I will test it and send you feedback. So he was very successful, lots of usability testing. I hope he, you know, didn't waste his life with all the drinks. But just buying a beer to your friends or users and see them using your product can help a lot. And what I always get when I talk about usability, people ask, but then how many subjects, how many users do I need to test with? And maybe it doesn't sound very convincing, but it's actually, there's a magic number in usability testing, 5. And there is a paper that actually proves it, that you just need 5 users to find out 80% of all usability issues. And once you fix them, you need another 5 users to find next usability issues. And so it's never-ending iteration process of improving your product. And I think that's very important to understand, that you never can make it right from the first time. It's something that has to be continuously improved. And once you have that idea, it's much easier to fail. So let's imagine you have your issues. You tested it, and some of the issues you can solve easily and immediately, just change the button names, move it around. But some of the issues may be even maybe too complicated or requires too much attention to interface. So what I would recommend to do in that case is pair with the designer. And if you don't have anyone around you, but usually there are many of them who wants to help on the project, you can ask an existing community. And for example, that's why open source design exists. On GitHub, they have job board issues that where people can just come and say, I need help with that, and designers come on board and come up with design and UX solutions. And it's been working for a few years already. Open source design, organized design track in FOSDEM, and it's a big community now, I believe. There are others, for example, Outreachy. I think it's originally from Software Conservancy Foundation. They organize internships for underrepresented communities in open source. And those internships are not limited only to coding. They help with user interface, graphic design, documentations, and other non-technical contributions. And just to show how it might work, I want again to show you Valentina project. So that's a forum message where community decided to come up with a mobile application for managing measurement. And they just put some user cases, and I tried to come up with the prototypes. This is one of the prototypes I make after each discussion we have. And this is a very simple one, just introduction to login process, but it has already helped us to move on much faster. And it doesn't take a long time for me to make this prototype. It's just 1 hour, but that's how we work with the prototyping and discussion. And it can save you a lot of time. But working with designers is never easy, and in order to be productive, we all have to learn how to communicate and articulate design. Because it's not in use that design is very subjective. So one person likes it, another person just hates it. What can work in one context just will fail in another one. So it's very difficult to talk about design. And what's said, everyone has an opinion. So it doesn't make it easy. And as an example of how people are learning to talk about design, I want to bring up this issue we have in open source design. So Apache Camel project came to us with the idea of, with a suggestion to make a new logo design. And in the next few days, someone came up with this design. And it was just a contribution, so somebody, I made this one. But there was a kind of a huge drama after that because people said, I hate that, it reminds me of MasterCard, it's not right type of camel, and you don't understand anything. And it was really painful because, you know, someone spent a lot of time to make this design. And but I think the community balanced itself. I came to decision that design is about problem solving, not about personal preferences. And there are more and more different designs. And they're all beautiful, and hopefully all some of them are funny. Who knows, maybe community will vote for this one. I don't know which one a community will select, but I'm sure it will be done up in like Apache way. And let's see next year which logo will be there. So while talking about graphical design is super difficult, talking about usability is also not an easy thing. And this is a book I found recently, Articulating Design Decision by Tom Griever. And I want to bring some advice from that book, which I found super useful. So whenever you talk about design to a community or to a designer, it's very important to focus on what works and what doesn't work and forget words like I like, I don't like, I hate. This is never helps. And also, it's very important to ask lots of questions and to uncover how designer came to these decisions, because you will save yourself a lot of time not to recreating all the options he already went through. Don't claim to be a user, it never helps. Let design explain their decisions. It always helps. And empower design to make decision. With that trust, even though you might not like the designs, you will get trust back from the designer who will listen even better to your opinion. Use helpful language, nothing difficult about that. And give designers what they need to be successful. And it could be access to analytics or permission to do usability testing. Anything, just let them do it. If they fail, they fail, but it's something that could be very helpful. So there are not many. These are just four simple things that anyone can do to improve usability. And if I can end with a final note, I can tell that I think the challenge of being in tech is to, especially in open source, is a challenge of constantly improving and growing. And if there is anyone in the project who would speak for the user and represent user, then open source will win the world. So that's it. And if you have any question or objection or opinions or your own experience, how it's painful to work on design, I would love to talk about it.
What is drunk testing about? Is it just bribing people, or do you want to dumb them down, or did it get more accurate? Whatever. What's the purpose?
I think it's about releasing stress, because usually if you do it for the first time, you will be shocked how different users see what you build, and you just want to scream. It's not the right way you use it. So I think it's reducing stress, but also kind of making a nice atmosphere where you can talk about design. It's just like for fun. Because if it's formal, users sometimes feel stressed. I have an example. I've been working on a big company on a mobile phone, and I designed a little feature somewhere. And I was asking to users to find this feature, but they couldn't even unlock the phone. They felt they like were in an exam or something. So I thought a beer would help, you know, to make them relax. But usability testing is just about observing users doing stuff on your software. That's it. It can be anywhere. Just go out and ask, buy a chocolate or a beer, or ask any colleagues. Even developers that still involved in that project, seeing them using it already helps.
Yeah. Any more questions?
So from your experience, what would be a good way to measure the user experience? So if you have two prototypes, how can we compare them and say this one has better user experience and this one?
That's a very good question. It might be a little bit dizzy, but I'm going to usability explanation. And we had there some metrics that usually measured for usability. Almost there. So these are metrics that were established in the 80s by Nielsen and Norman. So you can compare them from usability perspective, how easy it is to learn, how many steps does it take to make certain actions. And I think if you go to NN Group website, it's not a beautiful website, it's about usability. So you can learn more metrics, and they have like all the information about that, because it's not only about these five metrics. You can measure different qualities, which has to be defined for each project differently. But I think it's a good start with the classic five qualities of usable software. Does it help?
Yes, I was hoping for some very objective way of measuring. Like, you have two prototypes, at the end of the day, you can say reliably, okay, this is 80% more likely to be more user-friendly. But
in terms of like solving which problem, like this interface can be user-friendly for newbies, this interface can be user-friendly for solving a particular issue, so there always should be a condition what we're measuring, and there's no kind of universal methods. That's why it's so difficult to integrate usability into software development, because there you can... Maybe you have an opinion?
Yeah. Just a follow-up question, actually. So one of the things, as you say, that's challenging is that software isn't abstractly usable. It's usable in the pursuit of a particular task for a particular user, right? And one of the things that I've seen done to try to narrow down the range of possible ways that you can measure success is by defining who you're designing for. So I'm wondering, you know, what thoughts you have about, you know, things like persona research and how that might fit into, you know, how open source communities think about their users.
Persona research is one of the foundation of UX research. I didn't want to talk about it because I've seen some engineers going like crazy about this, because it's very difficult to understand. So it's also a bit connected to marketing research. You always can see, oh, this is how our user looks like. It's a Mary, she likes ice cream, she hates bad software, and so this is kind of a description of a target user. Have any one of you ever seen a few people did, right? So Have you ever seen a persona for UX research? What persona is? Okay, so persona, it's a kind of a image of and descriptive description of a user, and there could be several personas for one project. And what it helps to maintain focus on your users and remember what's important for them. It's not very easy method, I believe, and that's usually should be done with UX researchers. I think it's much easier. But it helps to define target and then also priority for development. Like these features we develop for these target users, these features for this, and then maybe helps you build a better roadmap and also run user testing because, you know, for this kind of users, you test on these scenarios, for another users, another scenarios.
Oh, I have one question.
Okay.
So the UX research, like how Facebook UI is, with any geography of any kind of people can start using Facebook, right? So it's very user friendly. So what I heard is like UX research takes time on the particular for an application, which is, you know, UI is the selling point of the application. So you want to use an app. It must be more user friendly. So how does your UX research methodologies will help to the software development basically?
I think UX research can apply to any kind of experience, and it goes beyond flat screen, and it could be offline experience as well. It doesn't have to be only application.
I mean to say some methodologies you have to follow for this geographical area because this kind of UI screens would be better to use. So because these open source projects can come up saying this kind of apps, you are using a food app. So for this kind of geographical area, you can find this.
Yeah.
Because every app is a good app, which, software developer, we design. So UI is not very important in that sense.
Yes, and what works in some cultural context might not work in a different one. So that's why in South Korea, we have absolutely crazy internet, which probably not usable by users of Europe. Yes, it has a cultural context, and it's very important to consider that when you design. But open source, I think, is universal, and if it has a good cause, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. And how do you handle the stress when a UX designer get into multiple iterations of building designs for the UI people, basically?
What happens when you have multiple
iterations? Either you have to understand the end user, or you have to convince him saying that this is the best.
I think that's the goal, to understand what's the best for the user, not convincing them, because it never works. So if you have multiple prototypes, the only one way to find out which is better to do usability testing. Once you do that, you can vote for... it's not going to be perfect, but it's probably will be the best for those users. Yeah.
Thank you. Any more questions?
So what will UX designers deliver? It's only the wire diagrams or actually the HTML, including the CSS and JavaScript, etc.?
Oh, that's a holy war question.
Right.
That's a good one. It depends because deliverables can be different from exploration research, and it's just a report, to some mockups and prototypes, which could have GUI design and could not have GUI design. It doesn't. It depends on the case. The next step, it could be just wireframes, which I did and failed, because also I don't think that wireframe is a good way to show design. People hate it. They don't understand what that means. It's design or not. No one knows. So a good way to work with prototypes, I found it the most efficient. And these days you can do high fidelity prototypes using code, or you can do prototypes just like I show. It takes just 1 hour and using your designs. It already can help the community to understand what they built and provide some documentation and standards. But also there are some designers, they can code and they contribute code front-end development as well. So it depends on a professional, a specialist in that area. And I think there are more and more designers who want to code, and there are more and more who doesn't want to code for the reason, because if I design for so many different platforms, should I be able to code for each of them? I don't know. So it takes already enough time to design things, and maybe I just don't have time to learn how to code. But it's always helpful to understand for designers as well. At least have a slight idea how development works. Otherwise, no respect can be. Yeah.
You had a question?
Hello.
Hello.
We have this problem in our project, the Apache OF Biz, that we want to create a new UI more for better user experience, and it's just an ERP. So you know that there is several thousand of features, mm-hmm. and I think more field, and how we can make a good UX with all these features. Mm-hmm. We start to discuss about that, and we decide to just don't put some features in the UI for to help us for user adoption, mm-hmm. you know, because in the actual state it's just disgusting. The UI is just disgusting because each developer have to add a new field, a new button, and they don't care about the UI, the UX,
yes,
whatever. So what can be your tips for this task?
That's a great question. So how do we deal with the projects when the list of functions is so huge, there's no way ever it become a usable or a simple interface? And I think that there are several approaches. For example, some projects like GitHub, for example, they just do not let add any additional feature until they're like really convinced about that it's needed. And it's really it's like a bit Nazi approach to features, like only voted and like the best features would make it into design. And I think, in general, UX design is about removing everything unnecessary. And I think that understanding what has the higher priority and what doesn't, I think that's the only one way you can start to move things around with usability testing. You don't think there are features you can drop? You think all of them are important?
You know that all features are important because it depends on your business. So you can't have just one UI that fits all the business.
Yes, I see.
So
that's difficult.
We start to imagine that we just have a UI for the users, just to have new adopters of our solutions, mm-hmm. and to have another UI for developers, mm-hmm. to add new feature. And if integrator, because it's an ERP, if integrator needs some features, they just pick up in the developer part and integrate it in the.
I think that's a great solution. That's a great solution. Again, by doing that, you can also see the adoption of the simple version, how many people use it, how they're satisfied with that, and maybe it will help you to improve the complex version as well. I think it's great. Like, it's kind of A/B testing. So you test that one and see what kind of feedback you get. But what's important here to constantly get feedback. But I think your approach is already great. And please share some, maybe this, if you have a thread. I would love to be to know more about these attempts, and maybe some UX designers could participate and help you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, the other thing, sorry. The other thing is, I just imagine how it will be, the pain we will have when we have to have a consensus mm-hmm. about the UI. I just frightened. That's all.
It's frightening. I know. I mean, it's my daily life. Even when I worked with UX design, like, I worked in a UX lab with 200 UX designers, and I wanted to kill myself every day. It's really painful. But that's what important is, to learn to talk about it and to, like we discussed previously, to work efficiently. Not drift to opinions and like and don't like. Always have a reason why you make that decision, and what are the data from user testing. And it's not going to be easy. I'm sorry. Painful.
I think it will be takes several months.
What I understand about your talk is that your usability has to be measured by certain external users and not really by the committers themselves. So how do you see that working in the Apache voting system, where actually only the committers and the PNC members are voting?
Mm-hmm.
And you say that actually the external users only know the truth. Do you see that working in such a voting system?
As I understand, Apache voting system is not always about buttons and design decisions, right? It's more like serious matters.
Yeah.
So I think it's okay because it works for community. And again, I understand to continue with your question, that it might be very difficult to find users. And sometimes you have to make decision within the community, but you have to make sure that those people are using software that they vote for. Because I know many developers, they build something and they never used it. And this is the danger of claiming that I know what users need, because if those who vote for this release or vote for a particular feature, it's good if they know what they talk about. So, yeah. But I don't see any conflict. I think the Apache voting and culture works perfectly. That's why that's why I'm here. You know, Apache community is great. Yeah.
My question is, from your experience, what is the best way to track different iterations of not design, but the user experience flow? So essentially, design is something subjective. User experience is supposed to be objective. And even if there is no good way to measure it, what would be a good way to track? Like, with code, it's easy. We just use Git, and we have versioning. From your practice, what is a good tool to express the user experience and to track the evolution and compare the artifacts produced by different UX engineers?
There is no easy way, and I've seen many projects using GitHub for that matter, and when just you go through different version of interface. And I think those tools are yet to come. And in enterprise, there are no such solutions. Those are very old school folders with the different version of interfaces. So I think with the prototyping tools that are starting to appear, and this UX box I was talking about, it will be easier, because I tested that tool and they have versioning for that. So I think the more open source UX tools we have, the more features like that will appear. But at the moment, using GitHub and just show different version of interfaces for people to learn what has been done before is the only one way, unfortunately. If anyone knows, please help us.
How about Photoshop? I mean, it's not an open source tool, but still it keeps certain way of, you know, providing a gap between UX and
does.
The front-end developer.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it still doesn't really work, because you have to share these files and then change it.
No.
I mean, I think it's not very open, the problem.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So how do you contradict between a UX designer and a front-end developer? How helpful a front-end developer can be with respect to UX designers?
I think... The best way for me to collaborate is understand that they do the same job and wear different hats at the same time, so that when engineer doesn't expect designer to decide everything and contribute all ideas and UX design, so it's more like a more flexible way of working. So when engineers separate themselves from designers, you never get good results, because it's more like fighting over different opinions than collaborating. So I think that's the most important thing in open source as well, to collaborate together.
Thank you. Any questions?
Didn't you have some opinion?
I suppose the question was about how do you manage maybe the conflict or pushback, because sometimes in open source projects you've got service providers that do that are there to do the UX design, the user interface design, so that's part of their service that they deliver to users. So if the community is actually tidying up the UI and the UX, then it's sort of almost like maybe putting them out of business, because the UI is getting more improved and they're not be able to sell any services. So I'm just wondering about, you know, have you experienced any sort of conflict or pushbacks with some of the communities
yes.
you've worked with because of something like that?
Yes, and it happened. There is a good paper of exclusion tactics of communities, how to get rid of those contributors. It's actually a great paper. I think I have it here on the list. So it's like goalkeeper's tactic. Awesome. Non-response social. You cannot see it, right? Okay. This is this paper. Non-response social exclusion and false acceptance. So there are many examples of where community, for example, would accept UX contribution, but then someone who originally created this feature would just like, you know, try to keep the previous design. Non-response is all often was the case before, not these days, but I think like 10 years ago. Although the paper is from 2015, and there are many great examples of this. And social exclusion, and if when they say, okay, but you're not part of the community, you cannot make decisions, and we have to overcome all these cultural issues, and I think it's a matter of foundations and communities to push forward, not technical contribution, where they will be appreciated and earn merit. So I will send you this paper, it's a great one. Thank you for the question.
Any more questions?
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a great time. Thank you.